tremendous dishes.
How many of you guys were at Todd's talk last night? Were most of you there? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was really fascinating in light of our conversation about community, this exponential trend that we're on with everything. And we're also on that with population and, you know, we're just consuming at this exponential rate, and it's gonna look like it's gonna level out, you know?
Level out, it's gonna probably bottom out.
Yeah. And so that just sort of brings a new dimension to this conversation, and we don't just talk about community because it's fun or
interesting,
but because it might be, well, it is necessary.
It's
and
essential.
It's what we need, and especially with that information, it's like, man, these conversations might come in handy later, you know? I mean, I think we've been able to afford the individual life we've lived, but it's not too sustainable. So anyway, that's especially pertinent to our topic this morning, which is koinonia as sharing our stuff. There are a few places, as we read on Monday in Acts, where koinonia really looks like this sharing our possessions. And then Paul and the writer of Hebrews also point us to this koinonia being generosity and sharing and all that. So we will just put those things up on the board as kind of where we've been, and then we can carry that into our conversation this morning. So let's just refresh what we read in Acts the other day. So Acts 2, 43 to 47.
James Bibles?
I don't know.
Oh,
no,
yeah,
there
are, they're there.
There are no King James out there.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't find any when I later found out this. Okay.
The NIV, NIV, NIV.
Maybe a new
Which
King James.
Yeah, I didn't.
Acts 2, 43 and 47. And I can read. So, again, this is right after Pentecost. They've all gotten baptized, and there's 3,000 people, and it says, "Awe came upon everyone, because many wonders and signs were being done by the apostles. All who belonged were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. Day by day, as they spent much time together in the temple, they broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all the people. And day by day, the Lord added to their number those who were being saved." And then Acts 4:32-37. I think we read this one the other day too, so. Would someone like to read?
I can do that. "The believers share their possessions. Now the whole group of those who believed were one heart and soul, and no one claimed private ownership of any possessions, but everything they owned was held in common. With great power the apostles gave their testimony to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. There was not a needy person among them, for as many as owned lands or houses sold them, and brought the proceeds of what was sold. They laid it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to each as any had need. There was a Levite, a native of Cyprus, Joseph, to whom the apostles gave the name Barnabas, which means son of encouragement. He sold a field that belonged to him, then brought the money and laid it at the apostles' feet."
So with specific attention to how they shared their things and what came about in sharing, does anything come alive for you?
This is a trivial question, but why lay it at the apostles' feet? Is that a euphemism, or what is it?
I don't think so. I think that's just a just a way of saying it's theirs to do with what they want.
To distribute.
Yeah.
That they're giving it all, like, all together to them with no strings attached, just it is yours. You know, I think it's just kind of a humility kind of thing.
They didn't have cardboard boxes, I guess, then. But I could see, you know, laying it in their hands. Mm-hmm. That would be...
It's probably too much stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
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 I would think it would be way too much stuff.
Would you question it if they said lay it in their hands?
Lay it at the feet. But, and all good.
I said,
no, I know. I'm saying if it said they laid it in their hands...
I wouldn't question.
You wouldn't question.
Yeah.
Well, I would question why not at their feet then?
Okay.
My footnote says that this laying it at the apostles' feet suggests their authority over the communal life. So,
Over the communal life. So, it's just going through my mind that that's where these back in the late 60s and 70s, the communes thrived for a while. Still there, so.
The Hutterites, Mennonites, you know, that's their basis for their lifestyle, and that's been going on forever.
Mm-hmm. I've always assumed that everybody, and it was just everything was in common, but as I was reading this, these may have been extra possessions.
Mm-hmm.
An extra field, extra house, or that kind of, I don't know. That helps it make more sense to me. Because the whole thing of we've sold all our houses and well, where are we living? What are we doing? You know.
Yeah. Now we don't have anything.
Yeah. Which that doesn't seem to make sense either.
Uh-huh. You know? So. We're going to read something from 2 Corinthians, and it has some nice things to say about that. But, it says here that there are one heart and soul, and no one claimed private ownership of any possessions, but everything they owned was in common. So, but then there is also this implication that, like, Barnabas is the only one who's lifted up here, so he's, you know, so it wasn't like everybody sold their field. And somewhere else, in Acts, the other day we read, and my footnote said something about, like, they sold what they had extra, and then used that money to feed the poor and widows and all
that.
Yeah.
But it's almost like it's an example of a specific thing, and then we see what happens in the next specific thing, which is the contrast.
Yes.
You know, so showing the human field.
Yeah.
Ability.
Yes.
Well, yeah. The problem with the next story is they imply one thing.
Yeah. Well, that's it. But
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Contrasting the right way and the wrong way to do it.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting to me because in the Old Testament we have this concept of tithing, and the Levitical laws only said you had to give 10%. It didn't say like give everything. And here we have this community who's like going overboard, you know, it's far more rigorous than even the law if we try to make it happen.
But the focus is really quite different here.
Mm-hmm.
The Old Testament was the offering to God, and in that system, then it was maybe taking care of some people. But here, this is solely for the appropriate purpose of caring for one another.
That's true.
Because the end is coming.
So,
that is a very strong factor in all of this.
Mm-hmm. But what happens in our society is that they get tagged as, when they do this, as cults. Or, like I said, is it Davidian that was one of them?
I don't know.
And I can't remember.
Branch Davidian.
Yeah, Branch Davidian. And then you're ostracized. I was thinking of something. have some conflicts with that.
Well, ostracized because of the negative aspects that come out of that sort of thing. Mm. At least what you hear in the news.
That's what I was going to say. Then you're brought out into the news to spread all over that all these
negative
things about you that aren't true, feed the public, you know. Yeah. But then the government gets involved in it, and then they've earmarked you as somebody to watch out for, you know. So
all because we're trying to live together,
you know. You're not following the norm. So we've got to keep our eye on you because you're radical. You know?
But the ones we have seen have been quite evil.
That's the negative aspect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
somebody has to call them into question.
Yeah, like Jonestown.
So we're told these kinds of communes or community situations, there is not truly an understanding of caring for one another. But, you know, part of the community are Ananias and Sapphira, they become very selfish and self-centered and destructive.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually the leadership of these things.
Mm. Well, leadership can easily corrupt.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the power.
Mm-hmm. Power corrupts. Money corrupts.
One other thing about this is that everything I read kind of stressed this idea that all of this was voluntary. Nothing was enforced. And like Ananias and Sapphira, they're not punished because they didn't give. They're punished because they lied. And so, I don't know, I think a lot of the commentaries I read are from maybe the Cold War era. So they really wanted to stress that this is not communism. But anyway, it's just that these communities are people voluntarily doing this, and so it isn't like the law. And so anyway, it's just remarkable.
But you know, when people have a tremendous spiritual experience and they want to be with those that have had it,
mm-hmm.
they often respond in a very generous way.
Yeah.
And when we were in Madagascar, when Christianity first came in there, and there's stories. Well, it was off to a traumatic start at first, but we heard stories about how when somebody was converted or something, the wealth was measured in cattle. They would give a whole cow to the church or something, and you know, have a big feast. And so there's this elation that also comes.
That drives it.
That you just want to give because you're so changed, filled with the Spirit.
Yeah. Well, anything else on these Acts passages? I guess one thing to connect back to like life here at Holden, when I first got here, I thought of Potty Patrol as like a free thrift store. And so I would go, and I came back in September for a weekend, and it was like, oh my gosh, free clothes, like raid the place. And so I took. And when I got here, I kind of like, well, I didn't bring a warm enough coat, so I got a coat and, you know, whatever, and I figure I'm here all summer, I don't need to raid the place. But then I realized, like, some people here they would take it and they'd immediately put it back. You know, it's like, well, I'm cold today, so I'll take this coat and then I'll put it back. And then I was like, oh, and so anyway, it just opened up. My mentality is so, pink. And then it's just a beautiful thing that we have this place where we actually do have some common possessions, you know, that we all have ownership of, and you use them as you need, and you put them back, and you replenish. And
if you don't need something you have, you put it in.
Yeah, exactly.
Since Gwen is here, you put it back in the same place.
Yeah.
Yes. We'll make that known. Yeah.
Don't just dump it on the floor.
Yeah.
In a box.
So anyway, that's kind of a cool example of that being lived out in this community. Okay, let's flip to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. And again, the Corinthians are some 50 years later, and the church in Jerusalem was that we read about in Acts is primarily of Jewish origin, of Israelite origin, and this community is Gentile in origin. And so they have a lot of differences, but they're talking about the same thing here. So chapter 8, 1 through 7, and 13 and 14.
And now, brothers and sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. In the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able, and even beyond their ability, entirely on their own. They urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the Lord's people. And they exceeded our expectation. They gave themselves first of all to the Lord, and then by the will of God, and also to us. So we urge Titus, just as he had earlier made a beginning, to bring also to completion this act of grace on your part. But since you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in complete earnestness, and in the love we have kindled in you, see that you also excel in this grace of giving. Is that
13 and 14.
Our desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard-pressed, but that there might be equality. At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn their plenty will supply what you need. The goal is equality, as it is written. The one who gathered much did not...
Yeah, keep going, sorry.
Stop there.
No, you can read 59.
The one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little.
There you go. Thank
Sounds
you.
Like manna.
It is. Yes, from Exodus. So, the setting here is Paul writes to the Corinthians because the people in Jerusalem, the Acts community, is undergoing persecution and war and famine, and they're hard-pressed. And so Paul's writing to his churches asking that they send possessions, goods, money to support the church in Jerusalem, which is a pretty big deal because Paul also is going around telling everybody to be careful of the Jewish Christians because they're preaching circumcision and the law, and you know, and so there's kind of this historical split between the Jewish Christians and the Gentile Christians. And here Paul is saying, please help them, even though we don't always get along, you know. And so that's what he's writing about. And the word koinonia is in 4, and your translation said service, but mine says sharing. So begging us earnestly for the privilege of koinonia in this ministry to the saints. Or sharing, or service, or participation, or community. So anyway, that's what's going on. And then in 13 and 14, that's what I had in mind when you were talking, Daryl, about the extra. He's not saying, like, give everything and be hard-pressed yourself. He's saying, if you have abundance and they have nothing, let's even this out. Equality is the goal, not... you know, whatever. So, and then he references the man in Exodus, the too much and too little. So, how does this inform your thoughts about sharing your stuff?
Is there an indication that
the sharing was appreciated by the Jews, if in particular? Or you just did it because it was the right thing to do without any appreciation being shared back?
I don't entirely know what the conversation was. I mean, like we pointed out yesterday, communication took so long that, you know, it wasn't like they were shooting down emails and the Jerusalem church was asking for this and the Corinthian church was responding. So, I mean, it could have been that Jerusalem didn't even know all this was going on. But I don't know. Do you know, Daryl?
No, but and I would say in terms of Christian giving, the whole sense of appreciation is irrelevant.
It's the right thing to do, whether it's appreciated or not. Let the Lord do its work.
Exactly, because if I get the jollies out of doing it, in other words, it's really for my benefit. I want all that praise and adoration. It's a whole thing of giving with a horrible hook on it. Because just as soon as they, I don't think they appreciate that, and you cut them off.
Mm. When I was in Chilean these last 9 months, my supervisor and I talked about appreciation, and he had this quote that he had up on his wall, and I don't remember it entirely, but it said something along the lines of, as a Christian, your need to be appreciated is entirely fulfilled in God's appreciation of you. Like, God loves us and delights in us so much that we never have to seek appreciation from anybody else. And so we never have to do anything any longer because we need to feel appreciated, because we are completely appreciated in God. And so then everything we do can just be free.
And God's, you use the word appreciation, or you could use the word love, mm-hmm. comes before anything has ever happened.
Yeah.
I think that's easier to say in words than act on, because our human nature, we want to be appreciated for what we do. Not necessarily praised or you know, you're wonderful or anything, but just for someone to recognize that you've done something. Mm-hmm.
Even if we don't want the appreciation, though, I think we want to know that it's being utilized. That it's mm-hmm. it's being used for good, you know, and have something come from that to show that it is.
Mm-hmm. The definition of love that I always use, the agape love, to do what is necessary and helpful for the other person, whether they deserve it or not. Mm-hmm. And that whole sense of appreciation thing cuts into, I don't think they deserve it, and. Mm-hmm. And then we cut off the love.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, God doesn't appreciate much of what we do, and yet God still continues to love us. You know, so that we have to fight to get that out of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. This last year, I did what was it called? Feed My Starving Children. Have you ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
And so a bunch of churches and groups in Chilean did this event, and you raise money, and this organization called Feed My Starving Children comes, and they bring this food stuff, and then the whole community comes, and you package it, and then you make these little packs of food that have, like, soy and rice and beans and flavoring or something like that, and then they ship it off to places in Africa, and you know, it's just all you need is water, and you can cook it, and it's got all the nutrition you need in it for a day or something. And so it's good, it's feeding people. But the whole time I was there, I had this kind of like weird feeling to doing it. You've got 1,000 people in a gym, and the whole time that you're doing it, they're keeping tallies of how many food packs have been packaged. And people are just getting excited. And I mean, it's a beautiful thing, people getting excited about feeding people. But there's this like undercurrent of
competition.
We're feeling good. Look at those numbers skyrocketing. And then I'd work at the food bank, and you know, those people need food too, and they need dignity. And There's not such an excitement about getting up at 6 in the morning and doing that, you know, so I don't know, it's fine. That's a whole sin boldly thing, but we're always going to include it in the equation because we are who we are.
It's
but,
American marketing telephone yeah. scenario.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's probably the best we can do sometimes, but you know, that need to be appreciated creeps its way in. And, yeah.
I was thinking if this is the reality of Christian life lived, the whole sharing kind of thing, how do we get that across to our society, which is so focused in the opposite direction? I mean, so much so that even those people who don't have want to protect the people that have got all the goodies, you know, and make sure you don't restrict them too much, you know. Crazy mentality, let's not say crazy, a very destructive mentality that we have that's rampant in our environment. And the Christian community, I don't think we're impacting it very well.
We got to protect the golden goose, or the goose that lays the golden egg.
I guess,
yeah.
Yeah.
I want to keep thinking about that. Yeah. Let's turn to Hebrews 13 and keep thinking about Daryl's question. So Hebrews was a letter that was originally attributed to Paul, but probably is not a Pauline letter. And we don't really know who the author is, and it was probably written between 60 and 95 Common Era. So, you know, it could have been a whole 50 years after the Corinthians even. But the letter itself is written like a sermon. But then at the end, it kind of is more like a letter, and that's where we'll be reading today. It's written to a Jewish audience, probably, but a Christian Jewish audience. And it's a second generation church that has suffered persecution and is probably getting agitated that Christ still hasn't returned. So a lot of these communities thought Jesus was going to come back right away. So this is a second generation church. Christ still isn't back. They're facing persecutions, and they're starting to drop like flies. And so this letter is written to them to encourage them. So Hebrews chapter 13, let's do 1 through 9.
Keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. Continue to remember those in prison as if you were together with them in prison, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering. Marriage should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure. For God will judge the adulterer and all the sexually immoral. Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God has said, "Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you." So we say with confidence, "The Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What can mere mortals do to me?" Remember your leaders who spoke the word of God to you. Consider the outcome of their way of life and imitate their faith. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. Through 9?
That's good enough.
Okay.
So here he's just kind of bullet pointing as a community, do these things. Pretty straightforward. But anything inspire or puzzle you?
I
to me, the challenge is what God's word says about marriage and what we're willing to accept nowadays. It's unbelievable.
When you get to, what is it, verse 5? There you get the kind of that base thing. God says, I will never leave you or forsake you.
Yeah.
So this is the motivating stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be afraid to in case my possessions go. You know.
And it's not what people do to us, because God is always there.
Mm-hmm.
And what can mere mortals do to me? Lord is my help.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that same thing from...
But the first part is really all about, you know, sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Meeting the needs of others.
Yeah, and right away in verse 1, my translation says, let mutual love continue, and yours said, let the love of brothers and sisters, or something like that. But, this idea of mutuality... in our sharing, it's not like top down, you know, we're in charge, we have all the stuff, we'll make the rules. It's a mutual love, mutual sharing.
And to enter into their suffering.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems to me that in our society, it was more that way, mutual concern. In the late 50s, and maybe into the 60s, and I, you know, maybe it's the old age thing, but I don't see that now as kind of a general tenet in society.
Do you mean kind of like you knew your neighbors, and so there was just sort of more? I mean, what did it look like?
Well, the Great Society emphasis. That came out of. I think there was a mentality we should be providing for the poor, and social service programs. I mean, I was a social worker, and there was this whole. Focus on caring for people, and it was organized as a part of governmental programming.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's moved much more to do you deserve it? There's a limit to what we can give you. Partly because, you know, people misused it, but the percentage of those who misused the system is about the same percentage of, you know, the wealthy people who are stealing from society, you know. And so now we find all kinds of reasons why we don't have to. Why we shouldn't do this for those people.
Yeah.
Just a real, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a whole separation, and it's a blackwashing of a whole section, and so now that we shouldn't take it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very different.
I would never give the government or acknowledge a pure motive if the government's involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see, that's a blackwashing of government, that, you know, it has good and bad, you know, so.
I think the community has definitely changed from back in the 50s, say. We knew our neighbors mm-hmm. for blocks that way and blocks that way and same the other way and would just be all over the place, and not just us kids. It was our mom and dads that knew everybody, so they knew if somebody was in need, or
mm-hmm.
and I can remember them taking stuff to different families, you know, going and getting together clothing and whatever, mm-hmm. boys' clothing or girls' clothing, or whatever, and taking it. And you don't see none of that now. Yeah. And in the farm communities, everybody knew everybody and would socialize at least once a month or during the season.
Go to New Orleans. Go to New Orleans.
They're like that now?
That was one of the really noticeable things with after Katrina, because that was all broken up. Brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and grandpas and in-laws and so forth. Yeah. They're no longer there in the
they're
community.
They're in Texas and they're in
Texas. Right.
I think it does happen today in some communities, because in our church communities, we have two families that I'm aware of that the church is practically totally supporting them. One of the fathers has been out of work for 5 or 6 years, and the church is, people are paying the rent, paying for one person to go to school, and then we have another young single mom who that is a housekeeper, mm-hmm. and the church is, she has no car, mm-hmm. the church is providing her all her rights to her housekeeping and stuff, so I think we do that, we maybe don't do it with our neighbor,
mm-hmm.
the
That's
one
different.
Right next door to us, but I see our church, when they see a need like that, really picking up, and this isn't just a one-time thing. We've been at that church for 10 years, and we've been doing it for these two families for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And there are some feelings of how long do they deserve to keep doing this, but they keep doing it.
Yeah.
And they're not the only ones. There's other families that have been in trouble for a short while, and the church picks up and takes care of them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, when they're able to be more self-supportive, you know, not slothful, which is an admonition of God's word.
Yeah.
Take on some responsibility when they're able.
And that's the difference that I see. Yeah, you express it, I think, very well. The difference that I see from the 50s, there was not this great concern about slothfulness.
Yeah.
It was
everybody was industrious.
Well, I don't know if everybody was industrious, but that wasn't one of the things you're looking for. And now I think our society is looking for that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a general mentality. I mean, not in specific cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just there.
The community has changed to be churches or whatever your social group is, as opposed to neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know my neighbors.
Yeah. What did you have?
I was just thinking also of this idea of sharing, and I assume that you were focusing on verse 2 when you wanted us to read about these things.
Mm.
And then it goes right into an awareness that the end time may be down the pike a ways, and so don't forget those people who are in prison. Don't forget those people who are being tortured. And I would just remind everybody, June is Torture Awareness Month. How many of us in our worship remember that and bring it to our prayers? I think that's an important way of showing koinonia with people who,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to see those people who are being tortured, probably.
Yeah.
But
be aware.
They're koinonia.
Uh-huh.
Where is the word koinonia in this
Actually,
section?
We haven't gotten to it yet. 14 to 16. I'll read it. For here we have no lasting city, but we are looking for the city that is to come. Through him, then, let us continually offer a sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of lips that confess his name. Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God. So the koinonia is that share in verse 16. Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have. So one thing that I was thinking of from yesterday is, we don't do community because it's optional. We do community because it's the way God made us. We were made in the image of a God who is communal. So it's in our DNA. It's how we are meant to live. And so then the word koinonia and the way that it trickles through scripture leads us to this sharing. And so is the sharing kind of like a, you know, an optional when we have stuff, when we can, you know, whatever. And like, yeah, it's not the law. It's not gonna, you know, God's not gonna love us or not love us based on it. But it's an extension of this way we were created to live. And in yesterday's text from Philippians, in that Christ hymn that we read, it talks about Christ and God. Christ emptied himself so that God might be exalted in him. So there's this, when you're in community, there's this emptying that we do that is just a natural part of our community life. And giving is one expression of that emptying, like physically getting rid of stuff so that others might have, and in doing that, God, you know, there's a transaction between us and God. I empty, God fills. It just keeps happening. So, I don't know. I think it's just more than just this, well, we can. It's kind of an extracurricular activity. It's core to who we are.
The key to life from the Christian understanding is relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a relationship which God initiates, so it begins with God. And then life is all about relationship. The relationship coming out of the Christian community is extended to your enemy. No, I mean, it's this is very radical kind of thinking, that no one is wanting to be excluded from relationship. Christ dies for all, you know, which is very different from I think what most, or all, I'd say all of us,
yeah.
I guess, have been ingrained with, and that is there are certain people who don't, you just don't relate to.
Yeah.
They don't count.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of, you know, countries, it's they don't count, so you can kill them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know, I've kept thinking of this through this. I had a really good example of fellowship and giving in my life. My dad, I can remember a point in his life when he went to a stewardship conference, and the man that led this conference at our church was in our congregation for a week. It was after I was away from home, so I didn't experience it myself, but it really impacted my father. With the blessings of tithing,
mm-hmm.
and this sort of thing. And so from middle age to end of life, he had a very strong sense that God is bountiful. And the one thing that he really left me and lived into my life was that there was always enough. And I saw him, you know, live in a rather meager way, but was hugely generous. And I did his taxes for him. So every year after year, he would give more than 30% of his income away. And this was, you know, a rather, you know, he had a $600 a month Social Security check and a $600 pension.
Mm-hmm.
And gave generously to colleges and things that he hadn't really benefited from.
Mm-hmm.
But that
God showed him that it was important. And, you know, but over and over again, he said to me, Lynn, there's always enough. God always gives you enough. Mm-hmm. And he said, and it's not in the ways that you try. He said, I never saved a penny until after you kids were through college. And then he said, you know, I got into profit sharing and, you know, it disintegrated. Mm-hmm. But God always provided enough. Mm-hmm. And that mentality that enough is enough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah.
You can't help your God.
If you need to go, that's great.
We haven't had breakfast yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So we gotta go before the breakfast. Yeah.
Thank you, Lynn. That's really good. And I think that's to the point that when you have an experience of God who is faithful, whether that's at a stewardship conference or a church or who knows how, it sustains you to be able to give.
I've always said, God has provided for all people, and we as human beings have messed up the distribution system.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone. Good conversation. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Tomorrow
it's at 6 p.m.
Yay!
Yay!